Campus FM presents The Probe. Produced and presented by Monique Chambers. Welcome to The Probe, with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Ed Duca, who's a lecturer in Innovation Communication at SEBI, here at the University of Malta. You may also recognise his name from being the editor of Think magazine and organising Science in the City. So Ed, quite a big remit you have there. So communicating science out to the masses is your thing?
Yes, I'm a science communicator, that's what I've become. But I believe a lot in public engagement, so seeing it as a two-way process. So us talking about what we do at university, that's very important. We're a publicly funded institution. But also listening to the concerns, the questions, what the public or what different parts of the public cares. Because the whole idea that there's this mass, general, faceless public is... really an idea of a bygone age, in the sense of, if I were to ask you, do you consider yourself, Monique, as part of the public, would you tell me yes or no?
I would hope yes.
Yes, so that would mean you're part of the general public. But then if I ask a researcher, you know, are you part of the public, they are as well. So they're part of the general public as well. But if I ask, you know, a six-year-old student, you'd get the same question. Everyone is part of the public. So you can't just have one message to communicate with everyone. You have to try and understand the person and talk to them and listen to them. Listening is very important in a way that communicates in a language that attracts them.
So you're asking the same questions in a different tone of voice, or different questions in the same tone of voice? How do you differentiate your research?
I think it depends on the different questions to different people would apply. You're not gonna talk in the same way to a 6-year-old who's not interested in science as a, you know, a 20-year-old who is. You're going to use different language, different techniques. You might use puppet shows and stuff like this.
I'd quite enjoy that as an adult, actually.
It works with adults as well. This is the thing. You might have a target audience, but I think forcing that target or restricting that target audience doesn't really work. I mean, many of the things we organize also Malta Cafe Scientifique, a monthly series of talks. And we get ages from, you know, students to 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds. So it really attracts a wide audience. But so you use different approaches to reach different people. And that's why Science in the City is a science and arts festival, in order to use those puppet shows, to use the interactive experiments where everything is hands-on, to have the art exhibitions and installations, but all around different topics in research. And I'm using the word research, not science, because research happens in every sector and faculty of the University of Malta, of any good standing university.
So when you're doing this research, is it all voice-based, or you have other methods? Do you do e-surveys? Do you do, you know, how else do you interview people?
So we're only starting to get into science communication research, and you need to see what the goals of the activity are, and then tweak the strategy you use for that. It uses a lot of social science methods. So there's a lot of questionnaires and surveys and qualitative interviews where you meet someone one-on-one, you can do focus groups. It always depends on the strategy and the questions you're trying to ask. And then you develop the method to try and answer that. A big problem is removing bias. So a common thing in science communication is to use online surveys. And they're very difficult to actually do in a way which is rigorous and scientifically sound, because it's very much an opt-in. So you tend to select for people who want to answer your survey. And let's say you have a group of 500 people, only 30% answer, which is a typical success rate. What did the other 70% think? This is an issue, really.
I also find I did an online survey recently, actually. It was very skewed in the answers the surveyor wanted, and you couldn't actually, you know, there were some answers that weren't right. They weren't any of my choices, and there was no option to actually say what you wanted to say, so they really weren't getting...
Well, any well-constructed survey should always have an I don't know, you know, the get out of jail card. But apart from that, if there is such leading bias, then you really can't interpret the results. It's a waste of time. So surveys have to be tested beforehand in order to see that the questions aren't going to misguide someone, they aren't going to mislead them, they aren't going to bias them towards certain questions. You have to use language which is neutral. To do well, they're actually much harder than I think a lot of people think. You have to keep a lot of things in mind and rigorously test them to see that they work.
So do you have any projects that are happening at the moment outside of Think and Science in the City, which was very successful this year?
Thank you.
Yes, really fun. That are happening? There's an EU project going on, I believe?
Yeah, I've got three EU projects going on. One is called STEAM, mm-hmm. where we're organizing a summer school.
Okay.
And an international summer school. The other one is called International Science Communication Summer School. So this is to train students, researchers, educators in science communication techniques, research methods, and the theory, but also practice. So giving a more holistic overview.
So you say an international summer school. What does that mean? Is it happening here in Malta?
It's coordinated by the University of Malta, but we've got partners in Germany, Finland, Britain, Greece, France, those countries. So that's why it's international, because we've got, I think, five different partners on board. And that's quite amazing, because you're getting the input of all these different experts. You know, there's science journalists on board, professors in science communication, some top-notch practitioners also. So it's quite incredible. I'm very happy about that we managed to attract this talent, really, to help train our students and researchers to engage with the public in a better way. There's two other projects. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to be quick. One is Creations, it's an EU Horizon 2020 project to try and creatively get science into schools, secondary schools mostly. So collaborators include CERN, Greece again, Germany, a whole host of others.
Is science suffering in schools today then? Is that something that you found, hence this project, or...?
What they found is that in Malta, for sure, I mean, all over Europe, there's a problem in science education and not being able to encourage enough people to take STEM careers.
Okay.
So the amount of positions that are available, we are not filling them. So that means that there needs to be an impetus to encourage that more, also because it's closely tied into with the socioeconomic success of a country.
Especially we're investing all of this money, etc., into the bio park, etc.
Exactly. Innovation, entrepreneurship are key to Malta and to Europe as a whole, because we can't compete by manufacturing more cheaply than Bangladesh or Thailand. We can compete by coming up with new innovative ideas that will generate a lot of revenue and that innovate and push the boundaries of what is happening. We have to create the new, and we have to do that in all around Europe, but also including Malta, which then relates to my new position at SEBI, which is the Center for Entrepreneurship and Business Incubation here. And that's part of a triad. There is, that's been recently set up, the Knowledge Transfer Office, and also Takeoff, which is the incubator of the University of Malta. And I think having that, you know, stability really, that help, that support structure, mm-hmm. is really starting to help getting more researchers to be innovative and students also to start creating their own companies and ideas.
That's it, for them to actually understand there's a pathway for that idea to make it out into the big wide world without waiting forever.
Exactly. We don't need to wait for other people to do it, we can do it ourselves.
So part of your role as lecturer then, what are you teaching? How do you teach?
Well, I've only just started this, so the teaching portfolio is still being developed. But the ways we're going to head down is, you know, so I'm an expert in science communication. I've been teaching, doing workshops in that for a number of years now. And now that will be tweaked towards entrepreneurship, business communication, and innovation communication. So a lot of the lecturing will involve, you know, so it's a blend of communication, marketing, business. This is, you know, marketing plans and, you know, press releases, strategies, especially with new online tools and social media and stuff like this. That's where I see the path leading down. Also, a big question is, how do you communicate to the people who want to invest in these companies? Because unless you generate that culture of angel investors, venture capitalists, of people willing to support these ideas, then it's very difficult to create the culture to do that.
So are you finding, or obviously it's a new subject area, but you're teaching scientists or you're teaching entrepreneurs in general? So I'm just seeing how that would be to, you know, get academics and scientists to actually be marketeers.
Yeah.
It's almost a different mindset.
I haven't started teaching yet, so I can't completely answer that question. We have to do some future prospecting here, but it will be targeted towards both students and researchers. Both need communication skills when it comes to business or even science communication. I found it easier to do workshops and stuff like this with students than the researchers. I think students are more ready to accept, you know, that they're at a stage in their life that they still need training and all this kind of stuff.
And they're being marketed at all the time, so they're understanding what's going on, where by the time you're a researcher, you're probably researching.
We need researchers to, without having researchers, let's go back to science communication, without having researchers communicating their own science, it is more difficult to engage the public. They've done many studies that show that people trust the people doing the research, researchers themselves, talking to them, engaging with them much more than they'll trust a journalist, and even more so a politician.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. You know, they're going to definitely skew the results to give you the headline that they want to,
exactly.
to have heard, for sure.
So researchers are seen as more, you know, get it from the horse's mouth, right? Even science communicators are not trusted as much as researchers. There's only a few percentile points difference. But the best people to communicate the research are usually the researchers themselves. Now you have to levy that with the ability to, you know, translate that hardcore algorithms or genetic
into human
research
speech,
exactly into something that another person can understand. And hence why I believe in having a mixed model. So you have science communicators communicating to the public, but they're also empowering, training, enabling the researchers to do it themselves.
Okay. You mentioned there were three EU projects you were working on. What's the third?
The third one is probably the one I'm most excited about, which is, so best for last. Nucleus. Nucleus is a 4 million Horizon 2020 project, 14 different EU partners. There's also South Africa and China involved. In fact, last month I was in Beijing meeting the science festival over there, seeing what they do and stuff like this, and it was an incredible experience, even seeing the different mentalities and approaches to science communication. Over there, for example, they still call it science popularization. They do some communication, in some cases they're really advanced, in some cases they're not. The cases they're advanced, for example, is they have science communication written into the law, so there's a law for it.
Should we be afraid?
And apart from that, there's a national strategy for it, which includes things like communicating to farmers and so trying to include all of the Chinese public, which is very innovative. Maybe the nature of the game also, that there are 45% of the population which is rural. So if they came up with a national strategy that only included just over 50%, the concept doesn't gel. But that is probably something that Europe can learn from. But then obviously, on the other side, Europe, especially the UK, is very advanced with its concept of public engagement. And public engagement, as I mentioned before, this two-way process. And the EU has now installed something called responsible research and innovation. So all those people out there who are applying for EU funds, this is a buzzword that that the EU is really going for. But apart from being, that sexy where what it means is not that scientists should now all of a sudden be responsible. They should have been responsible for a long time. what it means is that they need to be, or the dream is to involve the public or different parts of the public in research at every stage from the beginning. So you shape your research question with the public. For example, health, so the NHS in the UK and the NIHR, that's the research arm.
Right.
What they demand is that you've held some focus groups and stuff like this beforehand to show that there is a reason for your study. It doesn't need to be focus groups per se, but you've had some form of stakeholder engagement to prove that your research is going to have some form of impact. Now that's fine maybe for health, for some aspects of health science, but how do I apply this to quantum physics? Or
no, don't ask me that. Yeah. Don't ask me that question.
Or the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva. This is a 27 kilometer tunnel, spending billions of euros that smashes particles together to try and figure out what matter is made up of. What is the social relevance of that? Probably immediate social relevance isn't apparent, but maybe you can take this responsible research and innovation idea and adapt it. There are 3,000 researchers in CERN. Many of them, or quite a few of them, that's a great opportunity to get them to go into schools, to do things, to work with artists, to engage on a really big scale, because you've got all these researchers there. So if part of their time is spent engaging with the community about their work and stuff like this, look what a benefit it's giving to Geneva, then they become lucky to have this the world's largest experiment housed underneath their country, I suppose.
Slightly too big for Malta, but we do actually have multi-scientists based there, don't we?
Yes. There's Kevin Vella, Gianluca Valentino, and a host of others. Actually, we've got a Think Issue that is dedicated on that. That's our October-ish issue.
So you'd think this year. Science would be quite sexy in Malta, with obviously the success of science in the city year on year on year, and then also with, you know, it shows there are no boundaries for kids and people learning, going through science, that there actually is this amazing opportunity that you could be working in one of these environments like CERN, which is, it's got to be the best thing ever, isn't it? I'd love to go and have a look. What other sorts of research happen here at the University of Malta? So not just talking at that level, what other sorts of things get discussed and researched from Malta?
There's a lot of research going on. We've analysed statistics from the Web of Science. This was done by Professor Joseph Grima, also a great researcher on oxidative materials. So these are materials that when you stretch them, they go fatter instead of thinner. His difficulty now is turning that concept into real-world applications, and there's a big push for them to do that, from heart stents to have less heart attacks and artery clogging to safety helmets. And the opportunities are there. The problem is, you know, making them. It's the entrepreneurship, right, Boris, I suppose.
Identifying and quantifying and qualifying. Okay.
Yeah. So there's him. He, you know, did this quite rigorous assessment, however, only using a tool called Web of Science. So it's obviously biased towards research in those areas. But that has quadrupled over the last 10 years, which is an amazing feat, I think, for the university. And it shows that we are definitely going in the right direction. The problem is probably how to continue accelerating that, whilst at the same time, you know, engaging the public, making the public feeling involved in university, and continuing to expand and develop the quality of what we do. So there's many other researchers. There's researchers in the Institute of Digital Games, so collaborating on AI and games that can make games. So
okay, so a game can play its own game or make its own game.
They can play their own game and they can make their own games as well.
Okay.
So they can create levels and different types of games depending on the inputs and stuff that you give them. So it's basically a computer code that can make games and games that can be played. So this is, you know, computers showing some form of creativity, which is very exciting. Maybe worrying.
I'm sure I saw a film about this in my youth, and yes.
I think there are many things here. Some great recent films also. And, you know, faculty of ICT, there's machine learning, there's robotics going on, and brain-to-computer interface devices, so in the Faculty of Engineering and Center for Biomedical Cybernetics. Very sci-fi name, but I know the director, and it shows his reading interests, 1917 sci-fi. And these BCI devices, they're called, they look like a hairnet. You put them on the on the scalp. They've got electrodes that will read the electrical signals from your brain. Then use a computer to interpret them to do different things, be it move a wheelchair or a robotic arm or this sort of stuff. There's research in renewable energy. Tonio Sant, in the same faculty, in making better diesel engines, in hip implants, new materials for those coatings, making them more, you know, I can rant for a long time because there's such a rich research portfolio going on. There's the arts as well, looking into Caravaggio, other, you know, historians and researchers seeing the impact of the French on the Maltese memory. There's effect of British colonialism on Malta, Baroque periods investigations. There is archaeology, which is doing some amazing work. Right now they've got a project called Fraxis, which is trying to assess how did the temple people vanish and disappear. You know, those people that build the Hypogeum, the Neolithic temples that identify us with Malta, they actually disappeared around 2500 BC.
No trace.
And they're trying to figure out what happened. Was it religious fervitism that led them to their demise, which is environmental catastrophe, war? There's no evidence of war, though, because there aren't, you know, any...
There's no weapons found or anything, remnants of anything like that. So it's fascinating. So quite a lot of stuff that goes on here at University of Malta. Yeah. I'm not shocked now as to how you keep so busy with all of those things. So if somebody wanted to get involved with research, or maybe they want to help, not necessarily in the research aspect, but promoting or funding or something, they would contact you at SEBI?
Yeah, I mean, definitely if there are, you know, social scientists and educators out there who want to collaborate on research projects in science communication and public engagement, I would be very happy for them to contact me, edward.duca@um.edu.mt. I'm searchable on the university website. Also, apart from that, I have interns in summer to work on Think and Science in City. That's a great opportunity to learn some innovative skills. I give degree plus units. Basically, if someone is interested in getting involved in any of these things I've talked about, be it the festival, they want to participate in it, just, you know, drop us a line. And if I don't reply in a couple of days, remind me.
You're probably buried under a project somewhere.
Yes. Thankfully, now I have an assistant editor and an EU project officer, but it's still isn't enough. So do remind me. I am not trying to ignore you.
So that's my guest this week, Ed Duca, who's a lecturer in innovation communication at SEBI. He's also the editor of Think and heads up Science in the City and Café Scientifique. So thank you for joining us on this week's Probe. Speak to you next week.
You have just listened to The Probe, produced and presented by Monique Chambers.